Eyes on Fishing with Mitch Peterson, Josh Sheldon, and Brad Qualley, leading you to the next level.
Hey everybody, welcome back to All Eyes on Fishing. Today we're going to be talking about a fall bite, jigging. What does that mean, jigging? You talk jigging, people think just ballhead jig, but we do quite a bit of different things that we're just going to all kind of all encompass in jigging. Mitch, go ahead and start us off.
You know, I guess to further elaborate, it's, you know, jigging, slabbing, spooning.
Jigging wrapping.
Yeah.
Blade baits.
Blade baits.
Whatever it is. We're just titling this jigging, but it's going to kind of encompass all of it.
Yeah, we're pretty much, you know, vertical presentation, and there's all kinds of different things you can do. But, you know, when these water temps start dropping and the fish start feeding, you know, they get aggressive, and that's a great tactic to pick them up.
So when we're talking about the fall jigging here in Colorado, we're middle October is usually, sometimes actually middle of September is when you kind of start seeing this pattern. It depends on when the water temperatures start dropping. But we're talking that probably middle to late September, all October, November. You guys can do it earlier. They have success. But your typical pattern, would you guys agree that your typical pattern is when it kind of starts here?
Yeah, and I think what you look at is water temperature. Water temperature is your key. That's your trigger. For us here in Colorado, we start with our water temperature anywhere between 74 to 78, sometimes close to 80 in some of these lakes, is where it starts when we are at the end of August. And depending on if you have Indian summer or whatever you want to call it, how much further the summer and those warm temperatures extend into September, which will determine on when you start to see that the jigging presentation really start to pick up. A couple keys to remember is for us with these lakes that have a lot of shad will mostly have their second hatch of the summer around this time or just before, which means you'll be left with a lot of competition. So those fish will be in there and they'll be chasing a lot of bait, which could change your presentation and how you do some of this jigging. So I know Mitch, being from Minnesota, a lot of times this time of year, people switch to big minnows, go vertical jigging. Here, you can do the same thing, but it doesn't seem to be as productive because there's a lot of bait in the lake.
So let me tell you real quick, my opinion of fishing minnows on like a leadhead jig, which is awesome in Minnesota. Here in Colorado, it sucks.
Yeah, it does suck. That's perfect. Sucks. It does. It just sucks.
I mean, believe me, I've spent hours and hours and hours over the years trying it because it's so effective back home. But nope, they don't really want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah. So one of the things that kind of keys me in is if you're out there running and you see that temperature dropping from 70 down to that 68, yes, 66, that's when you're going to start seeing it. But if you don't have a temperature gauge on it, it's easy because, Josh, you talked about the second hatch of the shed. Pay attention to the surface because you're going to start seeing those little fish being subject to the drastic change in water temperature.
Well, it starts to kill them.
Yeah, you'll start seeing them on the surface. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's what my key is. Okay, we're starting to move into that jigging bite.
Yeah.
Or I prefer like jigging wraps, blade baits, things like that.
Right.
We do other things, but that's predominantly what we do. So we start seeing them coming off of the deep water points, start seeing them more deeper water. Now, you can catch them up shallow. It depends on where you're finding them stacked, where you're finding those balls of bait fish. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if you have a wind blowing stuff and they're starting to move into that 20, 23 feet, you'll find those fish in 23 feet. But me and Mitch were fishing, 2 weeks ago.
Right.
And we were finding fish, what was it, like 55?
56, yeah.
56 feet is where we found active fish. Right. We marked fish up in that 23 feet, but there was too much competition.
Right.
So we were getting to those balls of bait fish where they were coming off that the bait fish were suspended up in that 38 to 40 foot range in that 55 foot of water. But all those walleyes were sitting down and just going up and feeding when they wanted. So we started working that 55, 56 foot range.
Right.
Sometimes up to 48 is, I think, where we probably caught our last ones. But that whole range, we were working the bottoms of the balls of bait fish.
Right. And there's two things to address with that. One is, inevitably, somebody's sitting there going, well, you dumbasses, you're killing those fish as you bring them up.
I want to talk about how you can save
those fish. That's right. That's right. And there's ways to save it, and you can bring them up slow and all those other things. So don't get all fired up and talk about being fish killers and all this other stuff. We understand that when you fish deep, You know, there's issues with bringing up the fish. We get it. The second thing is when we brushed on temperature, I want to really key in on the fact that when the temperature drops into the 50s is when it really starts to go. That's when the fall bite starts to really move and those fish start to put on those feed bags and go. In the 60s, it feels like it's that kind of in between. I call it like the mud season, right? Like, you know, the fish are active, but not really. Maybe you get them at night trolling crankbaits up high. You know, they're starting to follow those shed, those newly hatched shed that are starting to school up. And yeah, you can still get fish, but it seems like your quality fish really start to hit when it gets in the upper 50s. And then as that temperature starts to crash right now, and I mean like today is a great example. Mm-hmm. We've had a cold snap this week, our first snow. You know, that temperature is going to drop into those lower 50s, upper 40s. And that's when you just can have 70, 80 fish days, just hammer them on spoons, jigging wraps. You know, and that's where we, I know us as a group, when the three of us go out, we typically end up finding them in these lakes that are roughly 50 feet deep. We'll find them in 20, 25, around a hump, on a break, or just sitting out in some muddy flat.
In the basin, yeah.
In the basin, and you know, we just move around real slow with jigging wraps and blade baits, and we work it over vertically over the top of them, and all of a sudden, wham. And the other thing to keep in mind too, and this is a big thing, is when you're working something, especially like a jigging wrap, you will feel these fish, and you will notice you are foul hooking a lot of these fish. The reason you are foul hooking them is because they aren't necessarily aggressively grabbing these baits, they are pinning them to the bottom. So the thing that you feel, which you think is a bite, is actually the fish pinning the bait to the bottom. You are setting the hook and you are catching them up underneath the chin. So keep that in mind, is it is a bite. It's just their technique and their kill method is different this time of year than it is at other times because, yeah, they are feeding on their shad. They pin them, they drown them, they eat them, and off they go.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. One of the things that when you were talking about that started making me think about the jigging wrap and the blade baits. Most of it is a vertical type presentation. When I talk vertical presentation, a lot of times we'll sit right on top of them. But if we are moving, if we find a big pod, we'll move it at like 0.3, 0.4 so you can work that pod.
Right.
But I want to talk about getting to the pod because here's where I think that over the years that me and Mitch have made some mistakes on locating a fish. Even if they're in the basins, breaks, it doesn't matter. You'll see a lot of guys out there ripping around the lake looking for them because it's obvious when you find them, you find a stack of fish,
yes.
Right?
And
that's the one you want to work.
Arch after arch after
but
arch.
What I think a lot of guys do wrong is that they are going, they're searching their areas at 15, 20 miles an hour or faster, picking up their ping speed, and then it's hard to locate those fish. A lot of times we go to where we think fish would be typically this time of year, and we'll drop it down to 4 miles an hour and really get good marks. And the reason why that's important is because as soon as I get over those fish, I can put that motor in reverse, drop my trolling motor and hit anchor, and now you're on them. You're not searching for them. It's more time fishing those fish.
And that's an interesting point because I've noticed that even with the best, you know, graphs, and we all have pretty good graphs in our boats, you go over them, and it's hard to get back right on them. I mean,
that's why the slower speed.
Yeah, there may be 50 or 60 fish down there, but it is amazing at how you can be a little to the left or a little to the right, and you don't see them. And so now I know some guys are like, I go through there, and I rip through, and I find them, and they're these big schools, and I know what to do. You know, and that's the Cavias method in the summertime. And if you guys notice, when Cavias uses the shivers or the moonshines, yeah, he is ripping around, and he can go back and find those big arches. But we're not talking about schools of 8-pound fish on Green Bay. We're talking about schools of, you know, 17, 18 inches, if we're lucky. And yeah, there may be 50 of them, but man, they are compressed and they are in one little spot and it may be another 100 yards before you find one like that. And if you slide too far off, you know, you're just casting in dead water.
That's why it's key. What do you think when we were down a couple weeks ago, how fast were we trolling around looking for them?
4 or 5 maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, we just took our time. I mean, we would go to areas just like you said.
We would rip to an area.
Yeah.
And then once we got out to, because during a day, you start figuring out where those fish are. We started finding fish in that 48 to 50. So we would run right to, and they were off of points. which worked out good for us. So we would run from one point to the next, right? But once we got 200 yards from that point, this lake is deep that we're fishing. It's over 100 feet deep.
And
we're still in Pueblo. Okay. So we're at 100 feet of water, but when we're running up, we're slowing down when we're at 80 feet of water to knowing when we're coming up into 50, we want to take a peek, but I want to be able to stop on those fish relatively quick.
Right.
Because you're right, they're hard to find.
They are.
And they might only be, the school might only be as big as your boat.
Yep.
So you really got to be on them. And if you're going fast, it's hard to find them.
And that's a great point, is boat patrol. I mean, boat control. Boat control. Boat control is, you know, is... this is more than any time of year. I am up the break, down the break, up the break, down the break until I find it. And I mean down to the break where it meets that flat bottom and then out off of that flat bottom for a little ways and then back up, because they are, and they're not in a specific depth. This is not like springtime where everything's in 10 feet or less of water. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are all over. You might find them in 10 feet of water and have a blast sitting right over them, vertically jigging in 10 feet, you know, or you're almost raising them up like you're ice fishing. But, you know, you slide just off them, and before you know it, you're in 25, 30, 35, 40, and that's where you find your next pod. And that pod may be more aggressive than the pod that was in 10 foot of water.
Yep, I totally agree. They are at different depths and everything. So, mm-hmm. And kind of the difference that the way I look at it here in the fall when the water is cold like this is they are congregating up. They are, you know, we're in the summer, say June,
right?
That live bait bite's just hot and heavy. The fish are scattered kind of everywhere. So, you know, typically in the summer, we might go check points or flats, different areas we know where fish. And you bet if we mark fish there, we'll go hit the next point that, right. You know, is similar, whatever, same depth, same kind of, you know, features, rock, whatever. And sure enough, there's fish there. And then we go hit a flat, and there's fish there, and there's fish on another flat that's the same. It's not like that in the fall.
Right.
They may be on that point, like where Brad and I found them, and we'll go to the next point that's mimics it almost identically.
The mimic it's underwater, but the difference was that we were always finding bait fish around.
It totally, yep, that's what it was.
It was bait fish. When we found bait fish at that depth, we found the same marks.
Yeah.
So were they consistent in that? Yes, but the difference is they weren't relating to the depth as far as the walleye. They were relating to the depth as far as where the bait fish wanted to hold.
And I think that's a great point, because that lake has a huge shad population. You go to some of these other lakes that have shad, but let's say it's a down year, or you're just not marking the bait balls like you were the year before in that lake. Now you don't have that clue.
Yeah, you're right.
So now it's even more important to slow down, to really kind of look. And I sit there and I spend more time looking at my map and the contours and all of that, and I'll pick four or five spots. I'll mark them with a GPS point, and then I'll go up and I'll check it, you know, and usually I'm looking at depth, and I'm looking at, is it a hump? Is it underwater structure? We have a couple metro area lakes where there's bridge pilings underneath the water. That has been really good for me in the fall. You go find a bridge piling and you sit on the edge of the bridge piling and you vertically jig it with a jigging wrap and you hammer fish. But then all of a sudden, about, I don't know, end of October, I can't get a fish off of that exact same spot.
Then you're going to be talking about something different that we're going to be talking about is some nighttime fall trolling.
Yep.
And we'll get into that. Yeah,
that'll be the next
where you're talking big mamas.
But that's the thing. And don't be afraid. When we like jigging wraps. We also do a lot of shiver minnows. And I actually like doing that closer to summertime. But the other thing is, you know, we do a lot of just straight up slabbing. You know, any type of
spoon.
Heavy spoon, stuff that you look
Bass
at.
Bassmaster type.
Yeah, I mean, even heavier, bigger. Gaudier, bigger.
But something to give guys an idea, because a lot of people know what Castmaster is. That type of thing. But we're talking half ounce, three-quarter ounce. I mean,
ounce.
Big.
Yep.
Yeah, big ones. Ounce when you're getting in that 50-foot.
Yep.
So that brings us up to the next point. We've talked about how we're locating fish, kind of what we're using as keys or indicators for us. But what's our top three things that we're going to do? We've talked about the jigging wrap.
Yep.
Right? We're talking about spoons, that being the Castmasters or just lead head spoons, whatever your choice is.
Right.
But then one thing that I know that we've really got into, and some guys swear by them, some guys say they suck, but we've had some success, is blade baits.
Blade baits work really well. Yep, and blade baits work really well, and that's another one of those you know, baits where you have to play with it, because it could be a small jig, it could be a really large jig, it could be three in a row and then you let it sit. That is something where I've learned with blade baits is you have to play with it, because it is definitely dependent on the fish's mood and the lake.
It's super aggressive because they have such a hard vibration.
Yep, yep. Mm-hmm. But one thing we need to cover and we need to talk about before we wrap this one up is let's talk about the gear you use to do your jigging wraps, because we all do it different. You two do it more similar than I do. Mm-hmm. But I do it different. I like to use, I like to use a bait casting reel or some sort of, bait reel where you can just drop it straight down with your thumb. And I like to use the same type of bait casting reels I use when I do my bottom bouncing, where I engage it, the Abu Garcia reel with the trigger, where I engage it with one and then I click it over with the neck with the button on the left. That's it, right? So I click it and I can do everything with the thumb. So I can constantly adjust my depth. You guys use spinning rods.
Nonstop.
And so, and
nonstop.
And I like the spinning rods when I do shivers because you know the cast.
Because you're casting shivers more than you.
But I like to
cast jigging wraps too. But yeah, you're gonna cast, people most of the time cast shiver minnows.
Yeah,
they're very similar baits.
Yeah,
I mean the way they're shaped, but they glide completely different right. under the water.
Right.
Why would you say we use spinning reels over bait casters? I know why. I do.
Why?
Because I like the fall ratio. When I put that bait down, I see my line go limp instantly. I pick it up one crank and I'm right on the bottom. I can feel that. It's quick.
Uh-huh.
The bait caster reels, and I have, six, seven of them. And I don't mind them. But when you click that button because of the magnetic drag on it, it's a slower, it takes me a little bit longer to find bottom. Mm-hmm. Especially if I'm fishing deeper and I'm fishing a lighter jigging wrap, it's harder for me to tell bottom. You can still tell, but it's, especially if it's windy, I don't like it at all because I can't see the bottom when it's hitting the bottom. Mm-hmm. So the spinning reel is obvious. The whole thing just goes limp instantly. Yeah. Then you know you're there. That's why I do
it. See, for me, I like the fact that I can hold it with one hand. I can put the rod tip. Mm-hmm. I put the rod tip just an inch or two above the water.
Mm-hmm.
I drop it down and I watch it like you do. And when it appears to go just a little slack, I figure I'm on it. I click it. And then I can do, and I use I use a medium rod or a medium stiff rod. And because it's the slightest movements from the rod, from the water, which I'm only an inch or two off of, up 4 inches. And it just pops that jigging wrap up and it glides down. And I can do those quick ones with my wrist, quick one with my arm. But then when the fish hits, I have all of that range from the water up to your waist to set that hook.
Well, it's the same thing we're doing with our spinning reels. I mean, we do that same technique. We drop down and we're probably anywhere from that 6 to 8 inches from.
It just seems like when I watch you guys, and when I do it too, because I'll leave, if I have a spinning rod set up with it, I'll use it too. But you guys have a much bigger, or it just seems like your motion is just much more exaggerated.
You know when we do that? So when we're vertical, we do smaller ones. When we are pulling at 0.3, 0.4, we're sweeping it. We're sweeping it more. So you see that sweeping. And I'll be honest, probably 85, 90% of the time, when we find a pile of fish on a structure or whatever, we will drive around those fish at 0.4, 0.5 and work the outside of the fish and then right through the middle of and out. We don't stay vertical very often.
Right.
Most of the time, we're moving a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a little bit windy, that's best for us. If we're having 7-8 mile an hour winds, not below that, but if we're at that 8 mile an hour wind and higher, we end up putting our trolling motor down with the anchor lock.
Right.
And just the natural blowing of that, keeping you within 3-4 feet,
right,
that's pushing us through that pod. So we're sweeping through that pod. So that's how we do it.
And I mean, it's interesting because, I'll be up at the front, you two will be off the back or off each side. And I just watch, and it's just different. You know, you guys have a different angle on your line than I do with that, the setup. But both ways work well. So it's definitely good for everybody to check it out.
Well, you kind of brought up, how you use real short little jigging motions, basically. Well, ice fishing a few years ago, I was jigging a Castmaster in super clear water. It wasn't that deep. It was like 20 feet deep, but I could see bottom. I could see my Castmaster right in my house and everything. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, I kind of realized that I was way overdoing it. I was lifting this thing up. It was going up 5-6 feet.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, and seeing fish and how they react, right, that's not natural.
Right.
So yeah, I've learned too, a lot shorter jigging motion,
yeah,
is good. And
then same I think with the blade baits.
Yeah, same with the blade baits. There is kind of a difference between the blade baits and cast masters and stuff, spooning, right, and slabbing, versus maybe a jigging wrap on your letdown.
Yes.
So why don't you go into a little bit of that, you know, like kind of the differences.
Well, just real quick, I mean, if you have a glide bait like a jigging wrap, that bait, if you lift it up, when you lift it up, even if it's just a couple inches, if you hold it, that line's going to go tight and that bait is going to glide until it hits the bottom. And that gives you that kind of back and forth, especially if you're vertical, kind of gives you that back and forth motion. So you pick it up and it's going to glide back to your right. You pick it up, it's going to glide back to the left. And that's what it's going to look like underneath the water. As we're, jigging spoons, any kind of jigging spoon, guys, there's so many I can't even give you a brand. And to tell you the truth, I just look at whatever best and is the right weight I like, and I buy it. I don't even care what brand it is. But, you know, those are just going to come up and flutter down.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a direct drop.
Yeah.
As where the shiver minnows, they're different. When you cast those out, you give them the action. It's almost like walking the dog on a topwater, right? Mm-hmm. You give it two or three pumps because that bait is going to hop
it's
up.
Like, and it's snap gonna, pumps, though.
Yeah,
like pop, pop, pop.
And it's gonna dive more nose down.
Yep.
It's going to glide a little bit, but not as far as the jigging wrap. It's going to dive down. So when it starts to dive down and you pop it back up and that nose dives back down, you pop it up, nose dives back down.
Mm-hmm.
Now you've covered the same distance in 2, 3, 4 pumps as you do with 1 or 2 on a jigging wrap because it's going to glide.
Yep. It glides all over. It does. I mean, we've seen it in clear water before where we do like a 6 to 8 inch raise up on a jigging wrap, and that thing will glide 2 or 3 feet off to the side.
Oh, yeah. No, all kinds of action. So, you know, on a spoon and bite too, on the drop, you know, typically that's when the fish hit it.
Right.
It's on the drop when it's susceptible, right? And when I drop, I'll rip it up fast. When I drop it, I kind of control it where I leave just a slight little bow in the line.
It can pendulum.
So you can still feel it, you know, because a lot of times these bites are just little ticks.
Yep.
Tick. And it could be an 8-pounder, you know, for all we know. But it's
and that could be them just pinning it.
Totally, yep. Where on like a jigging wrap, I will purposely give it more slack on the drop to allow it to swing out a little farther. And then my other little tip. The other little thing that I really have learned over the time is in between my jigs,
yes,
I let it sit.
Yeah.
Yep, because so they will pick it up off the bottom, just like if you're using a soft plastic.
Yep. And a lot of times, I bet I've caught more on a jigging wrap with it sitting there after my jig.
You jig it and you let it pause for 6-7 seconds.
Yep.
It's almost painful long.
It is.
But bam, there it is.
Well, and that goes back to the whole pinning, you know, theory is they will pin it and you may not feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you let it sit or you feel a little bump and you just let it sit there. And when you go to jig it back up, fish on. You know, and so that's
it surprises
important.
You sometimes.
Yeah. But it is a blast. I'll tell you what, I love it.
Well, we're going to wrap it up tonight, guys, on jigging wraps, blade baits, everything that we have to do with jigging. Just get out there on the water, but really be mindful of where you're fishing. You got to find the fish. They're going to be stacked up. They're not going to be huge pods. Sometimes there might be, but they're going to be there. You just got to go out and look for them and then get on top.
Yeah, don't fish dead water. Fish. I mean, that sounds stupid, but it's the truth. Fish, because
trust your electronics.
Yep, absolutely.
So, from all of us at All Eyes on Fishing, we'd like to thank you for following us. Make sure you're checking us out at alleyesonfishing@gmail.com on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We constantly post stuff on this, and we'd love to hear from you. Email us on what your next favorite topics are. This is how this one came up. We had someone send us, hey, what do we do this time of year? So that's how we got onto this topic, and we really appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Thanks.
This has been All Eyes on Fishing. Join us again next time as we discuss all of your favorite topics. Be sure to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And check out our webpage and YouTube channel at alleyesonfishing.com. All Eyes on Fishing, helping you to fish the next level.